Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and lots of reactions all over the world, of course, to the news that Argentine Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio is now Pope Francis, including this reaction from a fellow Jesuit calling into The Takeaway yesterday.
He's a Jesuit priest. I am a Jesuit priest. Overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. Complete and absolute joy. Could not be more excited.
And he must have been genuine because you couldn't fake that emotion. That was Father Matthew Gamber reacting on The Takeaway with John Hockenberry yesterday. Aside from Pope Francis being the first Jesuit to be elected pope, his human rights record in Argentina during the dirty war there in the 1970s is also drawing some attention. So joining me now to talk about the first Jesuit pope and the first pope from the Americas is Peter Steinfels, co-director of the Fordham Center on Religion and Culture at Fordham University. Hi, Peter. Welcome back to WNYC.
Glad to be with you.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. We can't talk about everything regarding Pope Francis in one segment, but we're going to focus largely on the fact that he's a Jesuit, largely on the fact that he's from Latin America, and do a bit of so-called dirty war history and his place in it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or leave a comment on WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And yes, Peter, we are well aware that Fordham is a Jesuit school. So can you tell us what's so extraordinary about a Jesuit being chosen for the first time?
Well, I think for the first time is probably the most extraordinary thing. I think the Jesuits have traditionally discouraged members of their order from taking higher office in the church, but there have been many prominent exceptions over the years. I think that it signals someone of keen intellect who was known for his scholarly bent as a young man, started out to be a chemist, taught philosophy, literature, psychology, and so on. But I'm not sure how much else it really tells us. Within the order of the Jesuits, who not only are known for their intellectual interests and their social activism and their political activism, especially in situations of oppression, he seems to have been on the conservative wing. That is, he was nervous about liberation theology. He felt that the young Jesuits should stick to more traditional roles of parish work and so on during the period of the dictatorship in Argentina.
And let me ask you about that period known as the so-called dirty war period in the 1970s, when many Jesuit priests were drawn to liberation theology. It was a time in Argentina when political groups there were trying to put a socialist government in place. It was a time when thousands of members of many left-wing groups were disappeared by the military, including progressive Jesuit priests. And this was also the time that the now Pope Francis was the top Argentine Jesuit official. How familiar are you with the specifics of his role at that time?
I must confess, I am not familiar at all. I have only read different accounts of this in the papers over the last few days. So I cannot be of as much help to you as you might wish about the Argentine situation. I would say this, though, that remains an anger in Argentina about the events of those days, which is sort of comparable to the anger which has touched the American Catholic Church and the United States in general about issues of sex abuse of minors by clergy. That makes it, I have to say, very, very difficult to disentangle the realities, especially if they're not simple, because people strongly stand on one side or another.
And to fill in some of the details here from other news sources, Foreign Policy magazine has published a piece which says, in February, an Argentine court ruled that the Catholic Church hierarchy, of which Francis was arguably a member, had closed its eyes to the killing of progressive priests. Back then, in 2005, human rights lawyers filed a case against then-Cardinal Bergoglio, alleging that he had been complicit in the kidnapping of two Jesuit priests. On the other hand, the Associated Press, reporting on his record, says, in addition to those accusations, there are also reports that he worked behind the scenes to save Jesuit priests. According to the AP, Bergoglio said that he regularly hid people on church property, that he once gave his ID papers to a man with similar features so he could escape, that he persuaded dictator Jorge Videla's priest to call in sick so Bergoglio could say mass at the junta leader's home, where he appealed for mercy for the priests. This was revealed in 2010, and it might have been his humility that kept him from coming forward sooner, says the AP. So it sounds like he might have been on, you know, or let's say in a complex relationship with the government and the church in that period.
I think that's probably true. I think the first report that you mentioned there, I don't really think he was a member of the hierarchy in the usual senses, which are refers to, I mean, as a member of the hierarchy now, but in those years,
40 years ago,
as an official in the Jesuit order, he wasn't a member of the hierarchy. I think overall the record of the church there is not admirable during those years. I'm a little cautious, not knowing that much in detail about the 2005 charges, because they were brought forward, and this may reflect the anger that people still entertain, at a time when his name had been brought into prominence as a possibility to succeed John Paul II in an election that we know now most likely he came in second to Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict. So it's a very, very, but I will say that the impression you have of his personality is one of caution, so that I doubt whether the record, if it can be disentangled from that time, is going to show someone who took a bold stance rather than trying to do what he could behind the scenes.
Dan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC talking about Pope Francis and his background. Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of bring to light, actually, the president of Argentina actually speaking of his thinking and saying, actually, I believe the direct quote was, it's basically from the Middle Ages. He's quoted as saying that gay adoption is a violation of the civil rights of children. And, of course, this coming from anybody who is in the hierarchy of the church, if it weren't so tragically ironic, it actually would be laughable.
Yeah, and the quote that I've read from him, the terminology is that it's discrimination against children to place them in gay parent adoptive homes, according to him. And Peter Steinfels from Fordham University, this did leave him in significant conflict with President Fernandez de Kirchner, who said, as the caller refers to, that this was like, quote, medieval times and the Inquisition. So having that kind of relationship with the head of state of Argentina is some background for him to be entering the papacy from.
First of all, I think this is very relevant material in terms of the future direction of the leadership of the church. I would say that I think that that very traditional position is by no means limited to him. It's one that has been more widely held, and it's quite clear that on the moral issues concerned with sexuality as well as abortion, that he has a very traditional position. So, you know, the church does not change these positions by, or even modify them by, one person coming in and turning a corner. It changes or develops its positions by some process of collective discussion and wisdom. And a big question in my mind is, whatever role he has as an individual, with a personality or a track record that is inspiring or not, what will be his policy in terms of drawing on the collective wisdom to opening up questions like those of sexual morality or the role of women in the church or the sharing of power with bishops around the world to a real discussion? That's a kind of a question that seems to me in our emphasis on his personal life, which is understandable, but that's the kind of question that we don't know the answer
on,
to.
On his personal views. But do his personal views, does that statement, let's say, which is being widely passed around, that quote of his, that adoption to a gay couple would be discrimination against children, I realize that the general position on homosexuality puts him in the mainstream of the church hierarchy. But are there gradations within that? So would it make him relatively hardcore to go so far as to say gay adoption is discrimination against children, or is that too in the mainstream of the hierarchy?
Obviously, the opposition to same-sex marriage has been generally the center of the hierarchy, or maybe even more than that. Maybe that's been almost a widely held position. What you derive from that in terms of issues of adoption of children is a different question. And it sort of, for example, in France, it's also been an issue. In a number of other countries that have had liberal policies toward same-sex relations. So I'm not sure that unusual. Well, I think you can draw some conclusions from that, but I'm not sure how much. And I'm also a little wary about quotations back and forth in the midst of a political conflict about, as I understood it, about the change in Argentina.
Yeah, where gay marriage is, by the way, legal nationwide, for those who didn't know. Let's take another call. Doug in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hello, Doug.
Hi, thanks, Brian. I just want to address one little thing that was brought up in the media yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's a growing influence of the Catholic Church globally across Latin America based on percentage of Catholics worldwide that now come from that region. That percentage is rising. Yet this does not translate to the actual growth in Latin American worship, but a slower decline than in worship seen in North America and Europe. Latin American countries, which were portrayed in the media yesterday as a strong bastions of Catholic faith, do not show that out in terms of data country by country. Let's take one moment just to give you some stats on that. Brazil is a country with the largest self-identified Catholic population, which with around 123 million people. Yet that rate is actually of actual self-identified Catholics has fallen sharply from nearly 100% of the country in 1940 to a little over 60% in 2010. There was a great New York Times article written a few weeks ago on February 14th in which the former Catholic stalwart is basically growing a self-identified evangelical and non-religion affiliations. In 1940, there was virtually no evangelical movement in countrywide. Now in Brazil, over 20% of the population identifies as evangelical and 10% as non-religion. You can also see this in Argentina, where the Pope is coming from. 92% of the country identifies as Catholic, but only 20% of those identify as practicing Catholics. This is almost a very modern European dynamic. Basically, my point is this slow decline is a regional problem in Latin America for the Catholic Church, and that decline of Catholic worship is not expressly a Western European or North American issue.
Doug in Sunnyside, the well-annotated caller. Doug, thank you for all that, and I'm really glad you brought it up. I was going to bring up a version of the same question, Peter, because when you look at the decision to name a pope from Argentina or from anywhere in Latin America as a strategic thing, if we can look at it that way, I agree with him that it goes both ways. Yes, 40% of the world's Catholics is the number that I heard. come from Latin America. That's huge, and it's becoming the center of gravity of the religion in the world. At the same time, we've done segments here in the past about how Pentecostalism and other evangelical Protestant religions are on the rise and are chipping away at the Catholicism of the region. So maybe by appointing a Latin American pope, they also try to shore up enthusiasm in the next generation. Do you think that they think about it in those kinds of strategic ways?
I do think they think about it in those strategic ways, that this certainly won't hurt and may help reinforce the Catholic energy, if you will, in Latin America. I think all the statistics that were mentioned are right on target. I think there's a larger point that was made, too, which is that often the issues that are raised in the United States can be dismissed by people in Rome by saying, well, the United States and Canada only represent 8% of the world's population. Most Catholics are increasingly in the Southern Hemisphere, et cetera, et cetera. They have different issues. And they do have many different issues, as the question of the dirty war in Argentina shows and the anger resulting from that. However, I think it's a good point that in many ways the issues that are raised in the kind of society we're in, say, take those of the role of women or those of sexuality, are either now or sooner or later going to be issues in other nations. So the dismissal of this is a real danger.
At people's peril. And they have a terrible priest shortage in Latin America, even worse than here.
Yes. I mean, they haven't for centuries, and there's a whole history there that had to do with the implanting of the church and the relationship between Spain and Portugal in terms of clergy and lack of indigenous clergy for a long time. So that's a real, now, you know, awareness of that could be an advantage in a leader of the church, because that is one of the major issues that the church faces, that, if you will, it's middle management, to use a crass term way of looking at it, is shrinking.
Yes, indeed. I want to make sure to touch on one other thing before we run out of time, and it relates to him being a Jesuit, which is a Catholic order that's so associated with concern for the poor, and it also is sort of the other side of the politics of the church. So we talk about the sexuality issues, but there's also the wealth and poverty issues. And so he was clearly not for liberation theology, but he is very known for making help for the poor a big priority in his priesthood and his time as a cardinal, correct?
That's correct, and I think this reminds us, you know, that people come with different perspectives depending on their cultural and political and global setting, and certainly he has spoken up and out in terms of global economic inequities, maldistribution of economic power, and so on. Now, in that sense, there's going to be a certain continuity because Benedict did that too. You know, as E.J. Dionne, I think, wrote that, you know, he's on to the right of the American politics on some of the moral, cultural, social issues, and well to the left of anybody in terms of economic social justice questions. So there will be probably a continuity there in terms of those questions.
Well, I think the speculating about what Pope Francis is going to be like era is coming to a quick conclusion, and the seeing what he's really like era is about to begin. So we leave it there with Peter Steinfels, co-director of the Fordham Center on Religion and Culture at Fordham University and author of A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America. Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, and yes, I will call him the Pope of Consumer Journalism, on the media's Bob Garfield on his new book, Can't Buy Me Like, about social media transforming companies' relationships with their customers. Bob Garfield and co-author Doug Levy coming up next.